Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. We return to the climate crisis. Alas, the culprits seem to include civilization itself, including agriculture. Holy granola, Batman! Now what do we do? We'll return to Virtual Rendering's nice audio collage after this brief word from our sponsor.
What?
I hope you'll stay tuned. Last week, we heard half of Virtual Rendering's audio collage on the crisis of our climate and ecosystem. The piece started with global warming and the people who have been warning us about it for many decades, and the corporate pundits who deny it still, and the politicians who pretend it's not a big problem. That would include Mr. Barack H. Obama, fearless champion of so-called clean coal, offshore drilling, fracking, and mining the tar sands. How's that for a change we can believe in? But I digress. Near the end last week, the focus broadened, began suggesting that the problem isn't just Western industrial civilization. The problem, it began to argue, the problem is civilization, period. We'll pick up today with more in that line of thinking. Even the backbone of civilization, that is, agriculture, is inherently destructive of the planet. We'll hear about that from Toby Hemingway, plus some wise analysis by Noam Chomsky, and we'll end with some thoughts by Guy McPherson and others on the question, well, what the heck can we possibly do? And along the way, we'll hear some post-apocalyptic science fiction. Even scarier are the haunting pleas of a Philippine delegate to the 2012 International Climate Conference in Doha. Pleas, of course, that everyone with any power quite ignored. Virtual Renderings also goes by the name Chaz K. From his own spacious underground studio somewhere west of the Ohio River, Chaz puts together several of these sound collages a year. Each one sounds a bit like the soundtrack to a documentary film, except there's no film. Well, stare with your ears, as Ken Nordine is always saying. Nordine coined the term word jazz for stuff like this, and it fits. So let's return to Chaz K's performance. The piece is called What If You Knew? And we'll pick up where we left off.
So we can't terminate industrial civilization until we shut down the nuclear power plants. It takes at least 20 years to decommission a nuclear power plant. There was a panel in New York City last weekend, which included the recent ex-head of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in this country. And they concluded that it would take at least 60 years to decommission Indian Point, a nuclear power plant right outside of New York City. At least 60 years. So we can't see civilization that is making us fat, making us sick, and killing us, because if we do, we're all dead in a short period of time. Consider, for example, Fukushima Daiichi. At Fukushima Daiichi, they're going to try to move the 1,223 spent fuel rods from the pools 5 stories above ground in a pool of water. They're going to try to move those. The unbelievably incompetent organization, TEPCO, is going to try to move those. So we can't reverse industrial civilization at this point. It took me a long time to figure that out. So we have to maintain industrial civilization, which is killing us through climate change. So getting at the root, it's all about civilization, and it's a trap. And at this point, it's a one-way street. It's a trap, and we're already caught. There's no escape. So really, I guess the way to think about agriculture, or one way to think about it, is that it's a way of turning ecosystems into people. Because an agricultural ecosystem, well, that's another oxymoron. Agriculture does not support ecosystem function. You're losing soil, you're not creating anywhere near as much oxygen, you're not sequestering very much carbon dioxide, there's very little biodiversity. Farmers don't like biodiversity,
I mean, in theory they do, but they're actual practices. And I know I'm beating up on farmers, and I will say the old cliche, some of my best friends really are farmers. And I love farming. And I love the whole idea of making your living on the land. And I grow a lot of food. So it really, you know, it hurt to begin finding these things and really seeing that agriculture, by definition, can't be made sustainable because this is what it does. This is a former rainforest that's now being used to produce ethanol and sugar cane. So it's agriculture is the conversion of ecosystems into people.
Cause something is happening and you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones?
Corporations were cleaning up. Plague going through the United States. 50 million people died in 4 years between the sun and the disease. And that was when the first burning booths went out. It was a sanitation thing. You stuff the bodies in, burns it down to its base chemicals, and you get the $1.86 worth out of a little slot on the side. Huge lineups of people. Trucks. Stacked high with as many bodies as they could find. Just waiting to cash them in. You could make $100 a day if you worked 9 hours burning bodies. But the cash incentive of the streets got clean pretty fast. That's where the first human resources companies came into play. That's where they got their startup cash. Burning bodies of the dead, killed by the plague.
There are people who know, and there's a lot of people who accumulate wealth by accumulating information. And many of these people have known for a very long time that the carbon dioxide and the methane we release into the atmosphere doesn't show up in terms of temperatures for 3 or 4 decades. So the changes we're seeing now were locked in 3 or 4 decades ago. Changes we see in 3 or 4 decades happen as a result of what we do today. There's a huge lag between our actions today and the consequences down the road in terms of the Earth's planetary system.
Suppose you're the CEO, you know, chairman of some major corporation in the United States. Your task is to maximize short-term profit and market share, period. If you don't do that, you're out and somebody else is in. In fact, in Anglo-American law, it's a legal requirement. But quite apart from that, you just have to do it or you're just not in that position anymore. It's a crime of the position, not of the individual. That means you've got to ignore externalities. In this case, the externality is the fate of the species. It means you have to try to convince people, you have to run big propaganda campaigns to convince people that global warming is a liberal hoax and so on, which is exactly what's being done. It's quite effective. And you take a look at the Republican Congress, just about everyone who came in is a climate denier. It's all a liberal hoax. We don't want to do anything. They're already cutting down funding, not only for U.S. programs, but even for the International Scientists Organization, been defunded. They don't want to do anything about it because the fate of the species is an externality. And if you're working in a market system, you don't pay attention to it. Well, in this case, there's no taxpayer to bail you out. Once you destroy the possibilities of decent human survival, kiss each other goodbye. And that's where we are right now. This is not an abstract consideration. It's happening right before our eyes. Now, those are serious problems, and it doesn't make sense to ask, is that person good or bad? There's an institutional structure which is lethal, harmful in the case of, say, financial institutions, but not lethal. Lethal in this case, and that's not the only one.
Well, what can you say? What can you say? The earth is being destroyed in every way.
I think of sustainable as the midpoint between things that are degenerative, in other words, things that break things down, things that pollute, things that destroy, things that damage, which is most of, well, many of our activities, a midpoint between degenerative actions and regenerative activities. And nature, of course, is the ultimate model of regenerative, things that make things better for their having been there. And sustainable is simply the middle. Another way of thinking of that is you can continue to do it indefinitely given the resources that are available. I guess that's really the typical operating definition of sustainable. But because we are in the degenerative side of things so much, we really need to be moving from sustainable to regenerative activities. I mean, sustainable's, it's not all that great. You know, it just means you do it over and over again. If someone said, how's your marriage? And you say, oh, it's sustainable. Okay? I mean, it's not all that good. It's really not. So it's what we're shooting for. You know, we're shooting for sustainable, but we really need to be thinking much, much further.
Years of high school Aquanet hairspray use have done more damage to the ozone than any global warming scam has.
I remember Aquanet.
Aquanet. Every
I remember Brill Cream, but I don't think that had anything to do with the climate.
A little dabble, do you?
That's remember that?
There's more. The CO2 can also go boo, 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 boo.
This day, Madam Chair, marks a very crucial moment. We are 25 days away from the end of the first commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol. But we don't really have 25 days. We have a few precious hours left. We are at a critical juncture. An important backdrop for my delegation is the profound impacts of climate change that we are already confronting. And as we sit here every single hour, even as we vacillate and procrastinate here, we are suffering. There is massive and widespread devastation back at home. Hundreds of thousands of people have been rendered homeless, and the ordeal is far from over. Madam Chair, we have never had a typhoon like Bopa, which has wreaked havoc in a part of the country that has never seen a storm like this in half a century. And heartbreaking tragedies like this is not unique to the Philippines, because the whole world, especially developing countries struggling to address poverty and achieve social and human development, confront these same realities. Finally, Madam Chair, I speak on behalf of 100 million Filipinos, a quarter of a million of whom are eking out a living here in Qatar. And I'm making an urgent appeal, not as a negotiator, not as a leader of my delegation, but as a Filipino. I appeal to the whole world. I appeal to the leaders from all over the world to open our eyes to the stark reality that we face. I appeal to ministers. The outcome of our work is not about what our political masters want. It is about what is demanded of us by 7 billion people. I appeal to all, please, no more delays, no more excuses. Please, let Doha be remembered as the place where we found the political will to turn things around. And let 2012 be remembered as the year the world found the courage to do so, to find the courage to take responsibility for the future we want. I ask of all of us here, if not us, then who? If not now, then when? If not here, then where?
Climate chaos is well underway. This is a series of assessments conducted by large organizations. As we go down the page, the predictions become increasingly catastrophic. They're based on more data, and more sophisticated modeling as we go down the page. So by the time we get to the United Nations Environment Program from nearly 3 years ago, a long time since between major assessments, up to 5C by 2050, we haven't had human beings on this planet at 3.5 degrees C above baseline. So 3.5 C, 4C is almost certainly a death sentence for all human beings on the planet. It's not because it'll be a warmer planet. It's because the warming of the planet will remove all habitat for human beings. Ultimately, we're human animals. Like other animals, we need habitat to survive, and that habitat must include food. So without plankton in the ocean, there goes roughly half of the global food supply, because that's the base of the marine food chain. Without land plants associated with temperature extremes, cold and warm, the ability to lose land plants is growing rapidly. And there goes the other half of the food supply for human beings. If we have up to 5C by 2050, that'll certainly do the trick. The U.S. Department of Defense finally gets on board, and in their latest assessment, which just came out about 2 weeks ago, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change concludes that global warming is irreversible without massive geoengineering. This is among the most conservative scientific bodies on the planet, and they admit that we have triggered runaway greenhouse unless we do some massive geoengineering. They don't propose what kind of massive geoengineering because none have been attempted. No geoengineering strategies have been attempted at the necessary scale. So this sounds relatively dire to me coming from this organization. The relatively good news is that these assessments do not include collapse. The bad news is they don't include the positive feedbacks or self-reinforcing feedback loops. When you roll a ball on flat land, the ball, because of friction, tends to stop. When you kick the ball over a hill, the ball goes faster. As it goes down the hill, it picks up speed. That's a self-reinforcing feedback loop. We've triggered 25 of those. None are included in any of these assessments, including that latest assessment from a couple of weeks ago by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that recommends geoengineering.
If you feel you are not properly sedated, call 348-844 immediately. Failure to do so may result in prosecution for criminal drug evasion.
Any preconceived notions about money or how money works or what needs to happen or any ideas of national power or responsibility. This is a human problem, and that's the only way we're ever going to be able to approach any kind of a solution.
Some of them were dreamers. Some of them were fools. We're making plans and thinking of the future. With the energy of the innocent, they were gathering the tools they would need to make their back to nature. While the sand slipped through the opening and their hands reached for the golden ring, in their hearts they turned to each other's hearts for refuge. And the troubled years that came before the deluge.
Said that the world was going to end. Everyone said that everything was going to go sideways. And it did. The world did end. It's just nobody noticed. Maybe no one cared. We were too distracted by everything going on around us. We were too distracted by our own lives. But the idea is that maybe somehow, some way, everything was going to be okay if we could just change the channel.
People despair when they hear what I have to say, oddly. And so I respond with Edward Abbey's quote from 40 years ago. Action is the antidote to despair. Even if, especially if, we're all doomed, let's act. If you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, then do.
You've known since you were 10, maybe 12, right, that you're going to die? All of us in here have known this for quite a while. This is not some revelation. I'm not the first person to remind you, probably. But it's nice to get the reminder now and then that you're going to die, and so that maybe you should live as though the day were here. It's amazing what culture drives us to do, contrary to our humanity. So let's exhibit some humanity. Let's act. Action is the antidote to despair. Even if the action is hopeless, geez, it gives you something to do. You know, even if you live to be 100, it's nothing. Right? It's the blink of an eye. And when you're in your deathbed and you're 70 or 80 or 90 years old, you remember a few things. And not just because you're 70 or 80 or 90 years old, but because those memories are moments. The things we remember are moments. We don't remember whole days. You're not going to walk out of here and remember a third of what I said. You're going to remember moments. And some of those moments are going to stick with you for years and even decades. So let's create those moments. Those moments that we want to remember. Those moments that make us proud to be us. That make us rise above our petty selves and become what we're truly capable of becoming as human beings.
We must not believe that we are helpless victims. We must act as if we make a difference now, because the only alternative is to lay down, give up, and die. And I'm not like that, and I know you're not.
Now let the music keep our spirits high. Let the buildings keep our children proud. Reveal its secrets by and by. By and by. When the light that's lost within us reaches the sky. After the deluge, let the music keep
on. Now that Earth is in hospice, and all of us are in hospice, I think that points us, at least it points me, towards a way that we might want to live. Instead of pursuing glitter, pursuing gold, pursuing material possessions, accumulating stuff, what I see in hospice is people acting with compassion and giving things away. What I see in hospice is people who are not looking for another pair of shoes. Instead, they're looking for somebody they can help. What I see in hospice is people acting with a kind of empathy, compassion, kindness, and courage that we are all capable of exhibiting. That when we look through history for heroic individuals, we look at those characteristics. That's what I see in hospice. So, the other little piece of advice that I give to people is to pursue what they love. Instead of pursuing what culture tells you to do, right, go to college, get the engineering degree, go to graduate school, make money, blah, blah, blah. Instead of pursuing those things that culture is screaming at you to do, why don't you instead pursue what you love?
Short-sighted economic profit is intelligent, reasonable, then please, God, make me a moron!
Mm-hmm. was dying if they said this on the news, if they would clarify the picture instead of seeking to confuse. If you could see the ice caps melting, if you could watch the oceans rise, if you could see the consequences right before your eyes, if you knew the kids were dying, if you could look inside the river where their food comes from, filled with cyanide, if you could hear the parents pleading, if they were looking right at you, if you could see the anguish in their hearts, what if you knew? Bombs were falling if they showed them hit the ground. If you could see the bodies flying, if you could hear the sound, if you could see the rubble where the hospital once stood, if you saw the child's lifeless limbs, would you hold them if you could? If you knew that they were lying every time they spoke, for every laser-guided pinprick there were lives lost in the smoke. If instead of just the generals, they had doctors too to describe the carnage of the cluster bombs, what if you knew? They were saying when they think you cannot hear, if you understood what they do, if for you it was so clear, if you knew they shut down the factory in an economic ruse, if you could kiss the cheek of the child in the sweatshop that made your shoes. Every time we went to war to fight our evil foes, they told you we were really fighting for the good of CEOs. If you could feel the hunger of the many, see the riches of the few, if they told it like it is, what if you knew? You knew that you were living in a huge conspiracy. Would you leave your suburbs, get out of your SUV? Would you hit the streets and fight for all our lives? Would you hold your ground when the stormtroopers arrive? If you knew that the whole planet depended on what you do now, would you take a man with the speed our times allow? If the pundits told the truth for just a week or two and real life was shown on TV, what if you knew?
Do you understand what I'm trying to tell you? There are no answers. Only choices.
The human race has to learn how to leave the world alone. Alone.
On New World Notes, we heard the second part of some word jazz by Virtual Renderings, titled, What If You Knew? Good question. I've condensed the piece just a little for radio broadcast. You'll find a link to the complete composition and dozens more like it by Virtual Renderings on our website, which is newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust. Thank you for listening. Illegitimi non carborundum. And, as the Quakers say, let's try to live simply so that others may simply live. Ciao.